It's time for another edition of the Week in Review. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have with us two guests from different political perspectives to discuss the top state and national political news stories of the week, including the back-and-forth rulings in the John Doe investigation of Governor Walker's recall campaign. There have been some developments in state Senate races. Benghazi, the IRS, and Monica Lewinsky are all back in the news this week, and we welcome your input on these stories or stories you would like to introduce at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our two guests. Happy to have with us John Sharpless, a professor of history at UW-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Joe Winicky, former state senator, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning. And Joy, when you did that intro, all I could think of was the great Yogi Berra and their deja vu all over again.
Yeah, there was
a lot of stuff. Monica Lewinsky.
And I think there's probably one name in common with all of these issues. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But what do you... What do you make of this legal wrangling over the investigation into the campaign practices of Governor Walker's recall campaign, the second John Doe investigation? First, we have a Milwaukee federal judge saying it's halted and destroy the evidence. Then we have a court of appeals saying no, it's not halted, don't destroy the evidence. Now it is halted, but the evidence won't be destroyed. John Sharpless, what's going on here?
Well, I personally think this has been a good decision. I don't think he handled it very well. The first reversal came on his unwillingness to listen to an appeal. After every pleading, you step in and you say, we want to appeal, and he dismissed that. What I think is going on here is that the Milwaukee prosecutor had a lot of time to put together a case, a long time, a long, long time. This kind of reminds me of Kenneth Starr dogging Clinton. And nothing came of it. I'm convinced if he had found the smoking gun, we'd see indictments by now. And so the groups that were under scrutiny, they argued that their ability to participate in issue discussions in the upcoming elections was being restricted by being under continuous, that's the key, scrutiny. And so their speech rights were abridged. And that's, he wrote in terms of speech rights. And that's why he intervened. He didn't intervene on procedural rights. He intervened on speech rights. And I think it's going to hold up. I think, interestingly enough, this may end up being a Supreme Court case.
Joe Winicky, what is it that the Milwaukee prosecutors were looking for? What did they think was so wrong with what was going on in the recall campaign?
Well, first of all, John Doe's are secret, so we don't know exactly. But I think people have. I totally disagree with John on this. I think it's very appropriate that for once we switch seats today and mm-hmm. I'm on his left and he's on my right, because normally we're the opposite mm-hmm. in here. But the people have forgotten where this came from. This John Doe was requested by the Government Accountability Board. It wasn't just something that the Ken Starr prosecutorial thing. This was during the course of the original John Doe. They found some things as the recall, as the recall went on, that the GAB felt was, coordination. So they asked them to look at this again. Five judges, three appointed by Democrats or considered Democrats, two appointed by Republicans or considered Republicans. It wasn't a partisan thing. Agreed that this was the case. They appointed the prosecutor, and they went forward. Now, Judge Randa, and remember, this is the same judge who did the Georgia Thompson decision, which the same appeals court threw out in a matter of hours. And I don't know if you remember, I think I was on the show the day after that, where they literally pulled her out of an Illinois jail and said, you have been wrongly persecuted, and got her out. That's the same judge. I don't think that this thing is going to stand at all. I think the appeals court is going to overturn this decision in a New York minute. But the one thing I agree with, John, this is headed to the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Well, so Judge Randa said that the campaign and these conservative groups did find a way to circumvent campaign finance laws, and that's all okay.
He didn't say that at all.
Yeah, he did.
He didn't rule on the merits at all. He didn't rule on the merits at all.
Oh, I disagree.
He doesn't. I've read the decision. He doesn't rule on the merits.
Well, what is he saying then? If he says if that's what was being accused and he's not ruling on the merits, what is he ruling on?
He's ruling on their ability to participate in issue-oriented campaigning while they're being investigated. That throws a pall over their speech rights, that since they're constantly being hounded, they can't step forward in the public environment and pay for issue ads and advocate as they want to do. And since we have two Supreme Court decisions that argue that groups like this have speech rights, they argued under those Supreme Court decisions. Now, I know those are very controversial decisions, but it granted groups like this.
Clubs for Growth.
These are nonprofit corporations that are set up primarily for political purposes, granted them speech rights, and they claim that since there's this ongoing, continuous, apparently without end investigation. My personal complaint about this is not that it was initiated, but wrap it up. You can't have an investigation that goes on. Just as Scalia said about the special prosecutor, he was the only one who dissented on special prosecutor, and now we all agree that the special prosecutor was a bad idea. It's an open-ended investigation where you look for a crime. You have individuals, and then you look for a crime. And Joe, I would argue if they had something on this gang, they may well have coordinated. But if they had something on the gang, the prosecutor would be in court right now, and he would have indictments. He's had months and months and months. He's raided their house in the middle of the night. He's taken away personal papers. He's granted immunity to a lot of people. It hasn't worked. I know the Democrats like to see Scotty Walker sweat, and they really think it's a good idea to keep
him. Maybe he deserves to sweat.
Well, fine, but you don't use the legal system to impose themselves on groups that are advocating in the political system.
If this was proposed by Democrats, you'd have a point. But this was never proposed by Democrats. This was proposed by the Government Accountability Board, which is a bunch of nonpartisan retired judges, and five circuit court judges in five different counties.
Does the prosecutor have a political affiliation?
Well, actually, the person here, Francis Schmidt, admitted that he's a Republican who voted for Scott Walker in the recall, and that's been in the press several times, including today.
What about many, I guess, on the left are saying that Judge Randa, and you hinted at it, Joe, does have a conflict of interest here that he is, ruling on ideology.
Not least of one of which, one of the two law clerks he has is married to Steve Biskupic, who is one of the lawyers for one of the aggrieved counsels. Yeah, no conflict there. Sometimes, you know, life appointments are life appointments, and sometimes I wish they weren't, and this is one of them.
Yeah. Do you think that this is a conflict of interest, John?
I think it's a good decision. I think the John Doe investigation has to come to an end. I think the prosecutor has to put up or shut up. And I think this has forced it. And I think you'll see. I was a bit troubled that all this stuff had to be destroyed in a minute. I think that the appellate court's going to stop that. But it's gone on too long, Joe. You can't have a continuous investigation that goes on for years and years.
Have you ever heard of a judge ordering an immediate destruction of evidence?
It was a bit extreme. I will admit that. That was a bit extreme. And clearly the appellate court has stepped in to stop that. But the argument, I think, is sound, that if you have a continuous and a secret investigation. Remember, nobody has any rights in a John Doe investigation. You can't be protected by advocacy. People can say anything they want. They aren't held accountable for anything they say. There's no protection in a grand jury.
John, there will not be a John Doe investigation in this state again if this stands, because a federal judge just came in, and to use kind of your terminology, gives, all you have to do is argue it's doing a chilling effect on my free speech rights. And then anybody, guilty of sin or innocent, can just come up and say, hey, you're chilling my free speech rights. Therefore, and since now corporations are people and everything else, what the heck? I can make that argument on anything now.
I think grand juries have been seriously abused in this country. You know, you have guys like Garrison in New Orleans who used his grand jury to investigate the Kennedy assassination. You have local law enforcement settling what are essentially disputes amongst citizens in the grand jury investigation. There's no protection. It was set up under common law to determine in a judicious way whether there's a crime. You don't keep them going for months and years continuously hovering over people's activity.
Well, in this case, when it comes to campaign finance law, which we basically don't have anymore, Joy.
Yeah, well,
don't have any anymore. Now, under this ruling, the sky's the limit. People can coordinate, which has been against the rules forever. People can spend all types of corporate dollars, which is against the rules for over 100 years. Everything is fair game. And the people who are going to be destroyed by this are the citizenry. I don't know why anybody would run for public office in this scenario.
Have we destroyed all campaign finance regulations, John?
Well, I'm not a big fan of public finance regulations, so you're talking to the wrong guy here. I think it's a way... if you're upset about money and politics, get government out of the economy. As long as you have government involved in all aspects of state, local, and federal economy, it would be lunacy for people not to invest in governmental outcomes.
So we're supposed to get rid of child labor standards,
no,
clean water standards?
I'm saying as long as the government is going to be involved in nearly every aspect of our economy, lobbying groups will invest in outcomes. They will. They have to. It doesn't matter if it's environmentalists or labor unions or corporations or the NRA or people on issues of abortion rights. They have to invest in outcomes. They have to. They can't afford not to invest in outcomes because their constituencies wouldn't support them if they didn't invest in outcomes. Money's in politics for a very important reason. People want outcomes to their advantage.
Of course.
That's why the money's there. It's not there because of some sinister...
Whoever has the gold now wins.
I don't think that's clear. The data doesn't show that.
Well, yeah, I think it does.
In terms of elections, it doesn't seem to make much effect on elections.
John,
I think
does
it
a
makes...
candidate win if they get outspent 4-1? How often?
Well, I suffered from a deficit.
Me too.
I did.
Yeah, so we had the same situation in the same
Baldwin
year,
had
John.
Baldwin had 2.5 million, and I had half a million.
In mine, she only outspent me 3-1.
Well, we're talking with Joe Winicky and John Sharpless. John Sharpless, a professor of history at UW-Madison and a former Republican candidate for Congress, as we just heard. And Joe Winicky, former state senator, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin and a former Democratic candidate for Congress.
Nominator, John, right?
Money.
Yeah.
We both lost.
People would ask me, Mr. Sharpless, will you take PAC money? And I'd always say, I haven't been tempted yet. I'm
Nobody
waiting.
Nobody wants to give me any.
I'm waiting to be tempted.
Well, we are tempting listeners to join our conversation during this Week in Review. If you have a comment on the John Doe investigation that was halted by a federal judge in Milwaukee this week, or the implications of this court action, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We might talk a little bit more about the political ramifications of the those rulings as well, and other stories that are in the news this week. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with John Sharpless and Joe Winicky, and welcoming your questions, your reactions to John Doe politics, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll be talking about Benghazi and the IRS and calls that the Veterans Department Secretary resign and many other stories in state and national politics as we go along. But first, what do you think about the John Doe investigation that was halted by this U.S. District Judge in Milwaukee, and what effect it has on politics in Wisconsin? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, do you think that while this thing is going back and forth in the courts and may end up in the Supreme Court, Joe Winicky, that this is going to have any effect on Governor Walker during this election year?
No, I think people's opinions on the governor are so polarized. It's going to. And second, I think if there's one thing that this back and forth and tit for tat is going to do, is it's going to drag this whole procedure past November. But there's still the drip, drip, drip on the governor about things just don't seem right with this guy. There's just too much stuff that seems to happen where he seems to circumvent the law to do whatever it takes to win. And that'll be up to the voters. It's not up to me. But, you know, I mean, it's not like people are saying he is a white knight. He is clean and pure as the driven snow. There's a lot of dripping that on him about a taint of ethical issues. And, you know, from my perspective, I believe this for the last 6 months, that this gubernatorial race is going to probably be 51-49 either way, and I think the governor could well lose.
I think you're right. I
discussed this.
I think if Scott Walker doesn't take her seriously, he will lose. Initially, I didn't think she was a threat, but I've watched her now, and I've watched the numbers. She has a couple advantages that I didn't recognize. One, as a private sector person, she can look right at him and say, Scott, when was the last time you met a payroll? You know, I mean, he always talks about being sympathetic to the private sector, but the truth is, he's a public sector guy like me. His whole life.
John, and, you know, I don't criticize that like some people do, but to argue that Scott Walker has been anything but accepting a public paycheck for his whole adult life is just not true.
But I think that gives her a very strong basis. And I've been impressed the way – now, it's very early. It's very early, as you know, early polling is always confusing. You don't know what to do with it. But she has closed the gap on him in a way that I didn't anticipate.
Yeah, there's a new poll out. It was 47-47.
And that was actually from a group that is normally considered kind of conservative. Two of the closest polls in this election have been from what are considered conservative groups. Rasmussen and this other one. It starts with an M. I can't remember what it is. But the thing about the governor is, and if I was, you know, I'm amazed by what short memories people have, that when I was an incumbent running for office, if somebody had told me 6 months out I was in a 3-point race, I would be scared to death. Because, you know, I'm saying, how can I be in such poor position? 50% of the people don't even know my opponent. They're willing to vote for him or her. And I look at this, and Scott Walker, with the exception of one poll which remained nameless, has never been over 48%.
But we've had other people in that position. If you remember, neither of our senators have ever polled they usually poll around 50-52. Mm-hmm. Johnson is below that. But even Feingold never polled well, and he always won.
But Tommy Thompson always polled well.
For once.
Yeah.
He had one bad poll.
The Republican Party changed on time.
He had one bad poll. It was called the last election.
Yeah, well, we've had those.
I think Walker is still formidable. I go back to one of your earlier comments, and we could move to the national level. It's kind of like Hillary. Everybody's made up their mind. If I was helping either of these two gubernatorial candidates write a speech, I'm not sure what they could say that would bring anybody over. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Walker would say to you that you would change your mind. I don't know. Or what she would change to Walker people to make them change their mind. This is very people are very divided on these two candidates. Mm-hmm. There's very few in between, and I think the people in between are non-voters. So I don't know how they...
How do you get them to the polls is the largest question, and yeah. I agree with that. But, you know, it is interesting. One thing that I have not understood the Walker campaign and their allies, now that they can all coordinate, is that they keep making this attack on her for her connections with Trek Bicycle. Well, Trek is an iconic Wisconsin mm-hmm. name. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't have a Trek bike in their garage? Yeah. Everybody. I do.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I think what that does is it reinforces that she's part of a proud Wisconsin family that still provides 1,000 jobs in the state, is not headquartered in Madison, by the way, like they say, but is headquartered in Waterloo, little rural town. And, you know, people like iconic Wisconsin stories, you know, whether it's, you know, it's Sheboygan Brats or Kleenex Tissues or SC Johnson or Trek Bicycle. Yeah. I think that's an advantage for her. And they keep bringing it up as if saying that she's a millionaire. Well, I thought Republicans liked success.
You know, but I also just don't think it tracks anyway. It doesn't really matter. If that's what they're going to pin the campaign on, Scott's in trouble.
I agree.
People are moved by real issues. If he's going to stand there and say Trek is bad, nobody's going
to
listen.
This week, Mary Brooks said that, you know, Governor Walker needs to be fired for his job performance over jobs. Yeah. I mean, is that going to be the issue?
I think she's going to keep emphasizing that she's been a real-world person. You know, and then the implication is that Walker speaks real world. He talks about
it. But doesn't deliver.
But he's been in government his whole life. And so remember what, if you can, Americans are really weird on politicians. The truth is politicians are career government people. It's
generally.
That's just the nature of politics. Mm-hmm. And yet they don't like that, but they... We have this ambiguity about people being in political office.
Yep.
I don't know what we're going to do about it. There's no part-time politicians anymore.
No. Well, how can you be, especially under these new rules, because you got to spend 24 hours a day raising money.
Let's take some calls. We have Samuel in Milwaukee with us. Hi, Samuel.
Hi, how you doing? First off, I wanted to say that both of you gentlemen are incredibly well-spoken and civil on this issue, which is a fantastically refreshing thing to hear. I wanted to say that I don't think that career politicians and coordination with finance committees and support groups is anything new to anyone who's been around it. I do think that a lot of this, I feel like, and I'm not a huge fan of most conservative candidates, but I do have the feeling that much like the constant negative painting of Paul Ryan, that a lot of the stuff being drug out so long is designed to really paint the governor in a negative light for the country in case he decides to try to run for president at some point or another office.
So the John Doe was to paint the governor in a negative light.
You know, Joy, and I appreciate Samuel's comments. You know, the part that just I don't get about that is this didn't come from the Democrats. It came from the Government Accountability Board, and somebody got hoisted on this because Dave Deininger was in charge when this first happened, and guess what happened? Dave Deininger was not reappointed recently. Dave Deininger, by the way, a Republican, a former representative from Monroe, a friend of mine, a Republican through and through, but he's the one who was in charge of the nonpartisan Government Accountability Board that requested this.
Actually, there's gossip, and let me stress, it's gossip.
Yeah.
There's gossip that this actually initiated within the Republican Party.
Really? I did not know that.
Why?
Well, the story is that there was a dispute over where the money should go.
Huh. Yeah. It's always about money.
And the coordination was working to the detriment of certain people in the party who were in jeopardy for losing their seats in the state house, and they didn't get the money they thought they should have gotten. So the
Amazing.
Gossip is that this is actually an inside the party. It has an inside the – this is all gossip,
right.
I want to say. This is all gossip. The origin of this lies within the party, and then it got loose,
yeah.
You know, it got loose. And now it's dogging the conservative community in terms of their fund allocation. The thing about the court, I don't think this tracks. I just don't. I don't. The only people I find who get indignant about campaign finance violations are on this campus and in this town. The rest of the world view politicians as basically they have their hand in the honey bucket all the time, and they just don't get indignant on it. They just don't.
Because they think all politicians are corrupt.
That's right.
And that's a sad indictment on our system.
There's a Pew Foundation poll that found that something like 35% of people thought that their congressperson, their own congressperson, were corrupt. And then when asked, do you know their name, they said no.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know who they are, but I'm sure they're corrupt.
Is this where I bring up the definition of politics, John?
Yes.
What's a Greek word? Poly, for which means many.
Mm-hmm.
And ticks, which we all know are sucking parasites. I knew it was clean enough I could use it.
That's not bad.
Samuel also said this is nothing new. He thinks that this coordination between special interest groups or campaigns is commonplace. It happens all the time.
I gotta tell you, if it is, it's new. Because I've worn both hats. I've been an elected official. I've been a lobbyist. And I've been involved in labor organization coordination, and we were adamant that we do a fine line between what we were doing in the campaigns because we didn't want to go to jail, and we kept it separate. We really did. I mean, there's something called 1129 communications, but that's member to member, and we did not cross that line when I was involved.
Well, but we've already had one scandal. You know, Chuck Quala lost his license to practice for a while, and then Scott Jensen fought it and ultimately, after spending lots and lots of money, he came out okay. But he got banged up. But
to be doing pretty well now.
We've had one scandal, which I think most of the public couldn't unwrap, Joe. They couldn't figure out what all.
But you know what's scary, John? Within 10 years, we were back doing the same thing that put the leadership of the legislature.
But that's
in
what
jail.
Samuel said. That's Samuel. I know, but he said this
what's
is
wrong with us.
They've been going on forever. This is there's nothing new. This doesn't move voters. They
it
don't.
Should.
Oh, they should. Yeah.
Let's see if it moves Joan in Eau Claire. Hi, Joan.
Good morning. I want to thank you, Joy, for your wonderful and thoughtful program and both of your guests and continue. I love listening to your program. I'm really grateful that the Government Accountability Board initiated this John Doe probe. Walker is accountable for his actions. He's forever telling us about how he advocates for transparency. Well, let's bring his actions to light and see just how transparent his administration is. Let's remember now, what about that extra router? What about that hidden router while he was campaigning for governor in 2010? That wasn't very transparent. He should be held to the highest standard. I'm not sure that his actions can hold up to this scrutiny. That's my comment, and thank you very much.
Thank you for your kind words, Joan. My reaction, John Sharples?
Well, she's entitled to her suspicions. I go back. The prosecutor in Milwaukee has had an enormous commitment to this. He's tried his best. He has a staff. They've seized papers from people, even private papers, papers that had to do with only the management of their household finances. They've worked on this for months and months and months. And I know all my Democrat friends like to say, if there's smoke, there's fire. My argument is, where's the fire? At some point, the prosecutor has to step forward with indictments. And he has been putting that. If he had Scott Walker, I'd be willing to bet my house that he'd be in court with it. He'd be shouting it out at the top of the lungs. He doesn't have him. Yeah, I mean, and you'll say it's because Scotty is slick.
No, I don't think he's slick. I don't at all. I think he's dogmatic, but not slick.
You know what I'm saying? You can't indict on smoke. You have to have the fire.
To take down the governor of a state, you have to have a lot. what the first John Doe did when you read, when especially when those 27,000 pages came out, you started to see the picture of how this governor actually operates. That by itself, if used properly, will hurt this governor. When I was talking 10 minutes ago about the constant drip, 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 that's the stuff I'm talking about. You know, did this rise to the point where you're going to charge the governor of the state with a felony? I don't know. I do know this. It shined a light on a very bad practice. And just because they chose not to charge does not mean that they didn't think he was guilty of a number of violations. And I think that's where it becomes up to the voter to look at the whole picture. And I think when you see the picture of this guy, it's a little scary.
You know, you both predicted that this whole thing's going to end up before the Supreme Court. What do you think is going to happen? What will it mean for Wisconsin?
Well, I think
politics?
It's created a very interesting precedent. It'll be interesting. Joe thinks it's specious. The argument is, remember, I understand why you could say that. Remember, the judge is not deciding on the procedures of the grand jury. In fact, I don't think he can intervene on that. I don't think a federal judge could come in. Traditionally, you let that unfold, and then that's at the end, yeah. you plea on the basis of having had your rights abridged, and then that has to do in the nature of the appeal. But this argument's different. This argument is that if you have an ongoing investigation that continues and continues and continues, that throws a pall over people's ability to act in the political marketplace and speak out. You may dismiss that, but mm-hmm. I think that is a sound argument. The court may entertain it.
It might. John, I think in this case it will go to the court eventually, because I think and of course we're guessing, we're speculating, but I think the Court of Appeals will overturn the Randa decision quite quickly, and then it will go to the Supreme Court, but those things don't happen overnight either. And what I'm not convinced that this court, as bad as they've been in my opinion on election law and free speech issues, I'm not convinced that they would just routinely say this is just another one of these things. I think they may say this went too far, because I think this decision, I view Citizens United as one of the worst pieces of American jurisprudence in the last 200 years of what it's going to do to our government and our society. But I think this goes way beyond what the Roberts Court did on Citizens United. And they may want – one thing about the Roberts Court I've noticed is they go in steps, but they usually don't throw out the whole thing. And I think this one may have gone too far even for this court.
Well, I think they may dismiss on the federal court has no standing in a state investigation.
Well, that's what a lot of people think, actually.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Because it was a federal judge that halted a state investigation.
Yeah, that a federal judge halted a state investigation. And his leverage on that, people have to understand, is that it's a speech case and not a procedural case. It was very shrewd that the plaintiff brought it in at a speech argument.
Well, they had a lot of high-priced lawyers.
I mean, that's very shrewd, because if it had been a procedural argument, no federal judge could have stepped in.
Or it might be the only argument you could make, John. To stop it. It might be the only one.
It might be the only argument. And you need Citizens United to make that argument.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just think that Citizens United is such a horrible, horrible decision, and what it's doing to our government is horrid.
Well, we have to move on to other issues in the news this week. We spent
on to Benghazi,
a whole bunch of, yeah, right, on to Benghazi. No, on to some more state politics, and yeah, a little bit of Benghazi and more. And our Week in Review quiz. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review. Talking today to John Sharpless, professor of history at UW-Madison, and Joe Winicky, former state senator, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. Time for our Week in Review quiz, and we have a pretty straightforward question this week. 2014 marks the 100-year anniversary of the extinction of what particular bird? That's it. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What bird species was deemed extinct exactly 100 years ago?
That's not the
sparrow.
Oh, you can't. You can't. Don't. All right. You can give that as a hint.
It's not the sparrow.
All right. It's not the sparrow. And we have 5 minutes for you to call in your answer or email in your answer. We'll randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers and announce the winner and the answer at the end of the Week in Review show. All right. Well, let's. I think we need to move on to some other issues, including more state politics. We have Republican State Senator Neil Kedzie of Elkhorn announced he's retiring after more than 17 years in the state legislature. He's the fourth Republican to announce his retirement from the Senate this year. Three Democratic incumbents are also not running for re-election. Republican State Representative Steve Nass of Whitewater has announced he's going to seek Senator Kedzie's seat. So what's with all this turnover, John Sharpless? Any idea what's going on? Is this typical?
I have to defer to Joe on this. He knows these districts a lot more than I do. I don't know if these open up districts that can be contested or if they open up districts that are pretty much in the pocket of one party or the other.
Well, this one here, I think, is a pretty Republican seat, although it's more Democratic than it was before. I'm just interested that they seem to be clearing the field for Steve Nass, who I view as a bomb thrower. And I think there is an issue that could hurt Steve Nass in this election, and it's an odd one. But it appears he's been claiming that he lives 52 miles away from the Capitol when he lives 43. There's a big federal tax law issue relating to this that could be worth thousands and thousands of penalties. And there's one thing that can kill a politician, and it's dipping into the cookie jar to benefit yourself and on
personally.
Taxes, on personal stuff. And I think that issue may come and rear its head yet. The state Senate is in play. It's still advantage Republican. If I was, you know, I'm going to be real honest. If I had my guessing game on, I think the Democrats will close the gap, probably get to 17-16. The question is, can they win that other seat? Mm-hmm. I mean, they got a real chance of winning the Ellis seat. They got a real chance of winning the Schultz seat. They got a real chance of winning the Sheboygan seat. They probably are going to lose a Racine seat. And if that's the case, they're still one down. So they have to win somewhere else.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, because also this week... there was a Democrats do think that they have a good shot at taking the seat that's being vacated by Republican Dale Schultz, and Chris Larson has endorsed the Democrat in that race.
Shocking!
Yeah, I know, isn't that shocking?
Minority leader endorses a Democrat.
But you think that there is a good shot in that? In
oh,
that,
sure.
In
that district race? Went 55% for Obama and 56% for Baldwin. Yeah, I mean, it's become that area. It's trending.
Well, it
Democratic.
Used to be part of the second, you know, until they gerrymandered me out of the race. And that's. As you know, that part of the state is interesting. On a whole host of issues, they're quite conservative.
Yes.
But a lot of people in small towns in rural America are really taking the hit.
Yep.
And they're very proud people, and they don't want to admit, but they really are dependent on a host of government subsidies and agriculture and in business. And
two other issues, John, that really in the western part of the state, and I think you'll agree with them. One is environmental protection, and the other is public education, because they don't have all these parochial and private schools out there. They live and die by these little rural schools.
Mm. But often it's I found that I used to tell my fellow Republicans, you go into a small town and you give them a lecture about how the marketplace is going to take care of medicine and health care, and you're being cruel, because they know usually the woman has a job that gives them the health care they have, and it's really fragile, and if she gets laid off at Land's End, they don't have it. So
there's access to medicine,
if you talk to them about their basic values, you know, family and hunting and going to church on Sunday, they're very conservative people, but they're vulnerable people.
Yeah.
And sometimes the Republicans sound harsh to vulnerable people.
Right.
You know, one thing that Democrats have is they've got the humanity claim. And Republicans have never been able to capture that turf.
I'm not even sure they wanted to. I mean, by the way, that Sheboygan seat, I just want to throw this in quickly. Joe Leibum's the only Republican who's held that seat in like 50 years. Carl Otte had it. Cal Potter had it. Jim Bumgart had it. This was a Democratic seat historically.
Yeah. Yeah, well, speaking of Joe Leibum, there was a straw poll at the GOP convention last weekend, and State Senator Glenn Grothman won that straw poll for the 6th congressional race. I guess, Republican primary, where Joe Leibman's also says he's running. How do you read that race, John Sharpless?
That's the old Petri district?
Yep, yes, Petri's district.
Well, that's a complicated district. You know, it's a really long, it's a funny district. It spans, this almost spans the state,
it's
right in the middle of it.
It's a crazy district.
There's some very Democrat areas within it, and there's also some hardcore, very conservative areas in that district. I mean, really old-fashioned, hardcore conservatives in that district. Tim really played. He was such a sweet guy. People liked him just because he was nice.
I mean,
I don't think there was anybody I know in politics who was a nicer, more decent guy. He gives a boring speech, I'll tell you that. But a wonderful man. And they liked him for what he was. I don't think that rubs off on anybody. And I don't know if Glenn... I get a kick out of Glenn. I get along with him. But like Nast, he's got this burr, this sort of bristles, you know? And people either like Glenn or they don't. And frankly, he doesn't care.
If Glenn Grothman wins the Republican nomination, the Democrats might win that seat. Mark Harris, the county exec in Winnebago County, is running, and he's a very good candidate as a Democrat. And, you know, I don't know if he can raise the money. Yeah. But I'm not sure Glenn can either.
I'm not sure Glenn can.
Yeah. We have to... move on to some other issues, but let me ask a little bit about Brett Halsey was at the Republican convention last weekend. He did not distribute KKK hoods like he said he was going to, but he was trying to point out what he thought were the racist policies of the Republican Party. There is both Democratic candidates this week said they are going to ignore each other. Joe, what's going on with this?
Well, you know, in the same week, you mentioned Brett Halsey and we mentioned Glenn Grothman. In the same week, Glenn decides that we're going to eliminate affirmative action and Brett decides he's going to bring up the specter of the KKK. Both these guys, they got to go somewhere where there's padded rooms.
I don't even want to comment on Brett Halsey. I've known him for years. I can't unwrap the guy. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what he's doing. I think I'm sure the Democrats view this whole thing with a bit of humor. He's not going to improve that campaign at all.
No, he's not. But he's not going to hurt Mary Burke either.
He's
going to be a sideshow. I'm a little concerned. I was told today, this morning, that they're not going to let him speak at the Democratic convention, which I think is a mistake.
That's a mistake.
What are the Dems going to do at their convention, Joe?
They're going to give speeches and coronate Mary Burke, and Tammy Baldwin will give a speech, and there'll be a whole bunch of speeches, and everybody will say kumbaya, and then after which the Democrats have much more fun party rooms than the Republicans. They'll have a jolly good time. There'll be a lot of hungover people on Saturday morning, and then they're going to go home. Correct.
In our final minutes, we'll hit on some of these national issues. There will be more, as we heard on Point. On Point, we'll have a lot more discussion on the national issues. Congressional Democrats are meeting today to decide whether to participate in a new investigation of the attack in Benghazi. Republicans rammed through a resolution yesterday establishing a special committee to look into the attack. John Boehner, House Speaker John Boehner, says this is not going to be partisan.
Yeah.
How do you see this going, Joe?
I think they've already had 9 special committees on Benghazi, although they haven't caught up yet with the 50 or so votes to repeal Obamacare yet, but they're getting close. This is becoming a mockery. We have so many issues in this world and foreign policy of what's going on in the Ukraine and what's going on with Syria. We have domestic policy issues of trying to work, you know, the economy's starting to finally rebound. Maybe we should put some effort into it. And instead, we go on these partisan witch hunts over and over and over and over and over again. And it's all to play to the conservative base. This issue attracts the Fox News acolytes. And the Republicans need them in a lower turnout election to win.
Is that what's going on, John?
I'm afraid so. I really think that the administration screwed up on Benghazi.
Probably.
I think it was a disaster for the administration. But it's history. It's over. And I think really what's going on here, and we talked about this before we started, is that politicians talk to their supporters. They don't talk to the people. They talk to their supporters, and this still, along with the IRS, is still a burning issue of, that generates anger mm-hmm. on the right, a lot of anger.
Yeah, it does.
So they go home and they talk to the local people who feel very strongly on this, and they think it maps into the larger population. I think, I'll stress this again, I think the administration screwed up on Benghazi terribly. But it's over. It's history. I don't see any legislative solution. I don't. If the Democrats are smart on this, they won't go along.
Right. I agree.
They just won't show up. And then it'll just be a group of Republicans beating the drum. Mm-hmm. If they're smart, they don't join in this.
Yeah. Isn't some the Democrats are saying these are really hearings into don't hurt Hillary Clinton for president.
I don't know if it hurts her. I mean, Hillary Clinton is like Scott Walker. Everybody's made up their mind, and you're not going to move anybody. The people who don't like Hillary Clinton, also the people who really are upset about Benghazi, who like Hillary Clinton don't care about Benghazi.
You know, when they want to do some of these other issues, fine, but here you're exploiting a tragedy, an American tragedy. Four people died. It was a terrible thing. It was probably not handled right. Yeah. You know, either was the Marine barracks in Lebanon under Reagan, and 240 people died. How long do you beat this drum on a tragedy? You know, no wonder people don't like their government.
Yeah.
But I just don't think it moves. Again, it doesn't track voters very well. They're going to try to embarrass Hillary. And the people who don't like Hillary will go, absolutely, I'm with you on that. The people who like Hillary will disregard this and write it off.
Yep.
It's very much like Scott Walker. I don't think a lot of people are available in the swing vote on these kind of candidates. They've been around.
10%.
People have an opinion on them. It's settled. I don't know how – right now I don't know how Hillary writes a speech to win over the non-Hillary people. I don't know how she brings them over.
Well, what about the IRS issue? The House voted to hold a former IRS official in contempt of Congress for refusing to testify at a pair of committee hearings about this so-called IRS scandal. Is that
ditto? The last issue? It's the same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah, John and I probably disagree on this. I think it's the smoke where there's smoke, there's fire stuff. And a lot of these groups were trying to gain all the taxes exempt status. And this is an issue that it is not partisan with me. I hate the fact that we give all these groups tax exempt status all the time for little or no reason. And I wish we expanded our tax base a little bit so we didn't have such high tax rates. And all we ever do is narrow it through these special exemptions. 501c3s and 501c4s, and it's wrong.
I do away with 501c3s are real.
Some are. Some are very real.
I would do away with the category 501c4.
Yeah.
It invites political meddling. If you're going to have a group that can use donations for advocacy, but they can't support a candidate, you invite meddling.
Yeah, the bright line test is crazy. Yeah.
There's no way to sort that out. I do away with that category. I just don't.
Hey, we agree.
We have very little time. Is Monica Lewinsky going to be an issue in the 2016 presidential race, Joe?
I don't. I'm always careful not to talk about Monica.
Okay.
it always becomes so seedy.
Well, all I know is every time you bring up the Clinton administration in absence, fewer and fewer people care about the bad parts of the Clinton administration, but people like Bubba. They like the guy. I think he's the most popular American. And I like the guy. I mean, does he have warts? You bet. But if you keep reminding Hillary or people about Hillary that he's married to Bill, that's a good thing for Hillary.
I don't know what it does to Hillary. It might help her because she can be the long-suffering wife, or it hurts her in the sense that she should have been more adamant about her husband's silly behavior. I don't think it moves stuff.
Good enough. We will leave it there because it's time to congratulate Mark and Appleton as our Week in Review quiz winner. What bird species was deemed extinct exactly 100 years ago? Well, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this week ran a story on the passenger pigeon. The last passenger pigeon, Martha, died Martha was actually born in captivity in Wisconsin. And she died 100 years ago.
Did she die of old age?
I'm not sure, but it was at the Cincinnati Zoo. And I think we'll leave it there since we are out of time. Thanks very much for being with us. Joe Winicky and John Sharpless. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network.